Attention all staff. Attention all staff. We are now under a signal. Secure all offenders at this time. Please hold all movement and radio traffic until the signal clears. Please hold all movement and radio traffic until the signal clears.
Hello, and welcome to Inside Outs. I am your host, J.D. Lavelle, the author of Something to Teach. I want to begin this podcast with a question. How many of you listening right now think that you could make it on the inside? This isn't a challenge, it's just a question. Now, let me be clear. I'm not talking about a medium security facility. I'm not talking about a minimum security facility. I think most people would probably be just fine inside one of those places. I'm talking about a maximum security correctional facility where they send the worst of the worst. It's the end of the line. Could you make it? Some people might say, yeah, I know what prison is like. I watch reality TV. I've seen lockup. Well, let me tell you something. My prison was featured on MSNBC, and when I see episodes, I just shake my head. There is so much more going on behind the scenes that the audience never sees or hears. The creators of these documentaries have to create a narrative, a story. Well, there's a story for sure, but it's usually not the one that you're seeing on the screen. What many people on the outs, the outside world, understand about life on the inside has some gaps. I want to fill in those gaps. So, back to the question at hand. Could you make it on the inside? The reason that I ask is because I ask myself that very same question all the time. And I was just a teacher. To be quite honest, I didn't think that I was going to make it because I had no idea what life was like on the inside. You see, I was a person, just a regular person, and then my world changed dramatically. I started living in two very different worlds. The outside world, where I could drive to Dairy Queen and get a malted milkshake at the end of the work week. And the inside world, where there were no milkshakes. There was razor wire, fences, and heavy metal doors that only opened and closed when a blue-clad officer pushed the right button. It wasn't a boys' home, it wasn't juvenile hall, it was prison, it was the end of the line. On the inside, there were also criminal offenders who had stolen fire engines, robbed pizza delivery drivers with samurai swords, chased their parents with knives, and had sexual relations with the family dogs, a brace of beagles to be more precise. These were two very different worlds, and this podcast is about my life on the inside and the outs. Most of you already know about life on the outs. You live it. So my job is to teach you about life on the inside, life inside of a maximum security juvenile correctional facility. Why, you ask? Well, because I am a teacher. That's what I do. I taught for 5.5 years in the Department of Corrections. And while I'm no longer an institutional teacher, my time there left an indelible mark on my life. That's what this show is all about. My time teaching on the inside while living on the outs. Again, two very different worlds. Now, God forbid that you should ever get locked up, but maybe, just maybe, you've been looking at your neighbor's Jack Russell Terrier with that longing gaze of love, and you get caught engaging in canine carnal relations. Well, that's a sex offense. Dogs can't give consent. So you might get locked up as a sex offender, or maybe somebody looks at you funny, and you decide to beat that person into a bloody pulp. That, too, might land you in prison. My students did all of these things and more. That's why they were sent to our facility. But most of you are never going to get locked up, ever, so why listen? Well, maybe because I want you to appreciate your lives on the outs. Being free, you need to know that your freedom is a precious thing. In fact, I would venture to say that it's the most important thing in the world. So, again, back to the original question, could you make it on the inside? From my very first day of training with the Department of Corrections, the DOC, there was one question that was first and foremost in my mind. Would I make it on the inside? How long would I last? Some people didn't make it very long. Others, like myself, did make it. I will start each episode of the podcast with a question, a lesson, to help you to understand what life is like on the inside. Again, I'm a teacher. That's what we do. Some questions may be difficult to answer at first, but over time, if I'm a good teacher, then you should be able to answer every question correctly. At the end of each show, I will reveal the answer. It is worth noting that these questions are based upon my real-life experiences on the inside of correctional facilities. These are not made-up, random, fake questions. So, let's get started. Now, you also need to understand that there are going to be different categories for these questions. Today's category is getting played. This category covers a host of different questions, and it is probably the most important category for our gameplay. Here it is, your question. Sam goes to treatment team. At treatment team, there are two staff members, a counselor and a teacher. They review Sam's progress to see if he should be promoted to the next level, remain on his current level, or be dropped a level. During the past 2 weeks, Sam got some paperwork. He got a major. You see, Jimmy had been running his mouth on the unit. So Sam took Jimmy's coat, put it in a urinal, and pissed all over it. He gave it a good soaking. Sam was written up for pissing on Jimmy's coat. The treatment team decided that because of the paperwork, Sam should be dropped a level. Here is your question. True or false? Did Sam get played? I thought that we should start with something easy, a true-false question. You've got a 50-50 chance of getting it right, so good luck. And now, for your vocabulary lesson, the word of the day is getting played, verb. Getting tricked into doing something, getting blamed for something, being treated unfairly. See also set up. Here is the vocabulary word used in a sentence. Bobby was running his mouth, so I popped him one, and I got sent to segregation. Can you believe that shit? I get sent to seg even though he's the one running his mouth. I straight up got played. Again, your vocabulary word is getting played. And those exact words came out of my mouth when my pager went off. I got played. And yes, it was a pager, not a cell phone, a pager, old school. I carried it with me at all times, 24/7. Most of you are probably wondering, who even carries a pager these days? That's like ancient technology. But some of you, maybe, know why I carried a pager and not a phone. You can't carry a phone, any type of phone, into a prison. If you do get caught with a phone, then you're going to be escorted to the front door, and you won't be working for the DOC ever again. But you can carry a pager with you inside the walls of a prison, and I did. It also sat on the nightstand next to my bed, and it was hooked on my belt during the day. I carried it, waiting and hoping that it never, ever went off. Why, you ask? Well, because I was part of ERO for the DOC. In a later podcast, I will go into greater detail about this, but suffice it to say that ERO stands for Emergency Response Operations, and the DOC is obviously the Department of Corrections. I was a member of the Emergency Squad, and when I agreed to participate, They had assured me that my pager would probably never go off, ever. I didn't want it to go off because I was a teacher. I wasn't a hero. I wasn't supposed to put myself in danger. I was supposed to put myself in front of a classroom full of students and teach. But I wasn't teaching when that pager went off. I was driving home after a day of teaching. I was supposed to be done for the day. My kids were in the back seat, and I was looking forward to a calm Thursday evening, playing on the trampoline, cooking dinner, reading stories to my children at bedtime, all of the good family stuff. But that wasn't going to happen. I cursed as I tried to steer the car and free the device from my belt. I was taken aback, surprised, and scared, because it had never buzzed before, ever. I pulled the pager out and held it up. I peered at the screen and whispered, "Sweet Jesus." The message was simple. There was a 2-digit number on the screen. That's all, just a number. But that number was special. You see, when I had been given my pager, the people in charge had also handed me a little laminated card that I carried in my wallet. That little card contained a list of codes. The codes were as follows. 47. Equipment check. 48. Practice. Report to institution. 49. Standby. And 50. Red. Report at once. I would like to tell you that my first thoughts were heroic when I saw the number 50 on that little screen, but all I could think of was, "Oh no, I'm going to die in some awful prison riot," and I whispered a prayer, "Please God, don't let me die." The word Attica flashed through my mind, and then I thought, what the hell am I going to do with my kids? My wife was working. I couldn't just go and drop them off at her work. So I called our babysitter and begged a favor. "My pager just went off," I said. "I've been activated. There's some disturbance inside one of the facilities, and I have to go in. Can you please watch my kids until my wife can come get them? I don't know how long I'm going to be." Fortunately, she happened to be at the ballpark near our house. "Bring them to me," she said. "We're watching a baseball game. It's not a problem." I rushed home, changed into my uniform, and ushered my 2 young ones to the ballpark. Once they were settled, I drove out to the squad room and reported for duty. The squad room was located just outside one of the adult facilities across the street from where I worked. I was used to seeing friendly faces and a relaxed, congenial atmosphere whenever I set foot inside. As one of the newest members of the emergency squad, I had been welcomed into the group and enjoyed our training sessions. It was a good group of folks. But this time, when I walked into that squad room, I walked into a beehive of nervous activity that did not calm my nerves. Nor did it help when we were told to add duty belts and handcuff cases to our uniforms. As I gathered up my equipment, I learned that there had been a problem at the facility. Officers had been injured, and the whole place had been put on lockdown. We would be going inside to help maintain order. I would be going inside to help maintain order. Mr. Lavelle, the teacher, would be going inside to help maintain order. Mr. Lavelle was scared. I had no idea what to expect. In order to mask my fear, I kept quiet, didn't say a word. But there were some important questions lurking in the back of my mind. For example, how would we be maintaining order? Were we going to be given weapons? Fortunately, someone else was thinking the same thing and asked, "Lieutenant, what sort of weapons will we be issued?" "None," came the reply from the LT. Again, I whispered a prayer to God. "Wait," she said, "I take that back." My heart leapt in gratitude at the sudden answering of my prayer. "I have a can of OC spray," she said. "That's it?" someone asked. "Yep," said the lieutenant, "that's it. Well, you'll have your hands and feet as weapons too." That was not the reassurance that I'd hoped for. My hands and feet were not exactly lethal weapons, but I didn't have much time to think about it. We were ordered to assemble outside, and shortly thereafter, I found myself marching toward the facility, right past the armory. I gazed longingly at the small building which contained shotguns, gas guns, and semi-automatic rifles, and then I looked down at my hands and feet. There was not a single real weapon between us, nothing. And yet, we were supposed to maintain order. As we drew closer to the razor-wire-topped fences and towers with rifle-wielding officers, I again whispered, "Please, God, don't let me die. I'm just a teacher." The whole place was locked down. Everyone was in their cell. Thank God. I followed the lieutenant deep into the seemingly endless bowels of the facility and ended up on the PLUS unit. It was some sort of special unit where the offenders were supposed to find God, or at least pretend to. I was still hoping that God would have mercy on me, so maybe this unit would be a tiny oasis of safety and holiness amidst the rest of the criminal offenders. My orders were as follows. Go stand on the housing unit and walk around. Make sure that everyone is being safe. The facility housed around 1,400 offenders. They were split into 6 different housing units, and they split up the emergency squad into groups, and each group was sent to a different housing unit. I was kind of hoping that we would all stay together, huddled together, but no, that was not the case. Myself and a few other officers were sent to this PLUS unit to patrol. Granted, all of the offenders were locked down in their cells, but most were angry at being locked down. And as I walked my single, solitary self along the rows with windows, I was an easy target for verbal abuse. I didn't mind the abuse. It was the questions that bothered me the most. "Hey, CO, I gotta take a shit." CO stands for correctional officer. I was tempted to correct him and say, "Actually, this is all pretty much a mistake. I'm really an English teacher, but I sort of got played, and now I'm here with you, and you might have to go to the bathroom, but I don't think that my bowels are going to move for hours, maybe even days." Instead, I just nodded and thanked him for letting me know and moved along. I didn't know what else to say. There had been no mention of bathroom breaks when we filed onto that unit for me or anyone else. It was just me walking around while the offenders stayed in their cells. As I walked away, I heard, "Hey, did you hear me? I said I gotta take a shit." This was followed by a torrent of profanity. This went on for what seemed like an eternity. In reality, it was only a couple of hours. As time passed, my nerves began to settle, and I thought, this isn't so bad. I still had no idea how long I was going to be there. All night? I certainly hoped not, but if I had to, then it would have been all right. I wasn't directly in harm's way, so there had been no need to deploy my hands and feet in self-defense. It looked like things were going to be okay. And then I got some bad news. Another lieutenant arrived on scene. He was our squad commander. This man cut an impressive figure, and while his presence was reassuring, his words were not. "We're going to do a shakedown," he announced. The biggest shakedown that I'd ever done was to demand the return of my dry erase marker so that I could draw a plot diagram on the whiteboard. What did a shakedown mean here, in this place? I couldn't exactly raise my hand and ask what this new duty entailed, not while there were lots of faces peering through cell door windows watching the proceedings. Fortunately, the lieutenant either saw the look of confusion slash terror on my face, or he was just a really good leader because he looked at me and said, "Lavelle, go with him." He pointed to a more seasoned officer. "Work in pairs. Everybody works in pairs." Dutifully, I followed. Now, as part of my initial training with the DOC, I did know how to do both a visual search of an offender and a pat-down search. In fact, I was tested on these things annually, and I had to pass those tests. But that's not what we were doing that night. We were strip searching. So there I was, standing in front of a total and complete stranger, and I said to him, I need you to strip down to your boxer shorts and shower shoes. But wait, it gets worse, because after he stripped down to these bare essentials, without even so much as a hello and a handshake, I had to tell him, "Now, I need you to remove your boxer shorts and shower shoes and hand them to me." And he did, and I stood there, holding a pair of someone else's musty old boxers, which I had to inspect, and his shower shoes. And he just stood there in front of me, naked. It was late at night, and I should have already read my children a bedtime story and then snuggled into bed with my bride. But no, I wasn't. I was in this strange place with a stranger doing something that I'd never done before, conducting a strip search. Again, I was just a teacher. All sorts of thoughts were running through my head, like, how strange. They didn't cover this sort of thing in my teaching methods class. We had discussed how to best search a novel for figurative language, but not how to search an offender for contraband. I looked at his dirty boxer shorts briefly and didn't find anything other than stains. Then I had to visually inspect the man who stood before me. I had to give the man directions on what I wanted him to do, and to my credit, I was pretty good with the upper half of the body. "Please open your mouth, lift your tongue, and say, ah, fairly routine stuff." It was when we got to the lower half that I ran into problems. Being a literary man, I had thought of many ways to delicately ask an indelicate question. None seemed suitable to the task. I opted for visuals instead. Using my hands and raised eyebrows, I was able to convey to the man that I wanted him to lift the various parts of his nether region so that I could peer underneath. I was grateful that he knew the routine, and then we got to the most challenging part of my night. There could be no mincing of words here. "Thank you," I said. "Please turn around and..." "And what?" Again, words failed me. I was used to Romeo and Juliet, not rectal cavity searches. He was kind enough to bend forward at the waist and spread his cheeks. Please note that you never say "bend over" on the inside. That's a major faux pas. And so, with the worst part of the process behind us, I handed him his belongings and reached for my handcuffs. I fumbled with the cuffs and wished that I was holding a dry erase marker instead. I could draw a right triangle on a whiteboard faster than you could say "Pythagoras." But, for the life of me, I could hardly open and close a set of handcuffs without struggling. I was grateful that the gentleman was patient with me. I managed to get the handcuffs secured when he said, "I gotta piss." It made sense. They'd been locked in their cells for hours. But what the hell was I supposed to do? I knew that I couldn't uncuff him. It wasn't safe, but the man had to go. I wasn't about to offer to hold anything for him, so we went to the bathroom and stepped up to a urinal. There, I uncuffed one hand so that he could relieve himself. I stood there, directly behind the man, holding onto one handcuffed wrist, waiting as the unmistakable sounds of urination filled the quiet. Again, I wished we had covered this sort of contingency in my classroom management or adolescent psychology class, because I was certainly at a loss. What sort of idle chit-chat does one engage in during these awkward social situations? Wisely, I kept my mouth shut. After attending to his needs, I escorted the man to a bench in the center of the housing unit where he sat, handcuffed and clad only in boxer shorts and shower shoes. He waited patiently and without complaint while my partner and I combed through every single inch of his cell, rifling through books, magazines, clothes, personal effects, legal papers, and bedding. I didn't find any contraband. But I did find the 200th issue of Anal Action magazine. I had no idea that such a publication existed. The headline read, "Hottie Michelle hoists her hiney for porking." Suddenly, I was glad that I was wearing gloves for this job. I was not tempted to read through the magazine. What sort of prose would one find in such a publication? But it did remind me of a poem by Robert Frost. His words resonated with me on that fateful night. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. The strip searching and cell searching went on for several hours. At some point, the lieutenant called several of us over to him and told us to go home. Later that night, after a lengthy shower, I kissed my bride goodnight and set my alarm for the morning. I had to be back in the classroom first thing tomorrow morning. And then I placed my pager on the nightstand. The screen was clear now. No longer did the number 50 grace its little screen. I gave thanks to God for delivering me safely back home and remembered those fateful words that had been spoken to me. Your pager will probably never go off, ever. I considered those words and whispered, "Those bitches played me. I'd better never see the number 50 again." You are probably wondering how I went from school to a cell doing a strip search. Well, that is another story for another time, because now, ladies and gentlemen, we've come to the end of this first episode, and I need to answer the question that I asked you at the very beginning. Honestly, I thought this was really an easy question, especially since I gave you a hint with the vocabulary word of the day. Everyone listening should have gotten it right, but I will still go over the correct answer. I'm a teacher. That's what a good teacher does. So, here is the question again. Sam goes to treatment team. At treatment team, there are two staff members, a counselor and a teacher. They review Sam's progress to see if he should be promoted to the next level, remain on his current level, or be dropped a level. During the past 2 weeks, Sam got some paperwork. He got a major. You see, Jimmy had been running his mouth on the unit. So Sam took Jimmy's coat, put it in a urinal, and pissed all over it. He gave it a good soaking. Sam was written up for pissing on Jimmy's coat. The treatment team decided that because of the paperwork, Sam should be dropped a level. Here is your question. True or false? Did Sam get played? Ladies and gentlemen, the correct answer is true. Of course Sam got played. That little bitch Jimmy shouldn't have been running his mouth. All Sam did was piss on his clothes. Sam straight up got played by both his counselor and the teacher. Now, before I draw things to a close, there is one more thing that I want to share with you. I want you to know that there are wonderful things in this world on the outs. Like, for instance, your bed. When you go to bed tonight, I want you to savor the smell of clean sheets and the feel of a soft mattress. I want you to pull the covers up around your head as you listen to the hum of a fan, and as you drift off to sleep, I want you to delight in the comfort of sleeping in your own bed, and that you don't have to worry about waking up to find a penis in your ear. And so, our revels now are ended. Thank you for listening to Inside Outs. I am your host, J.D. Lavelle. You can read more about my time teaching on the inside in my book entitled Something to Teach. You can find it at www.jdlavelle.com or on Apple Books. As we part ways, always remember, there is no greater gift than your freedom.